Today's program was brought to you by Emmy Cheese, specialty cheese from Switzerland made with heart and passion. For more information, visit emmyusa.com. Borders seem to be all over the news lately. You've got trade wars, Brexit, and of course, Trump's wall. This week on Meat and Three, we're exploring how borders are created and blurred in the world of food.
We try to focus a lot on the fact that they are chefs by nature, that the refugee thing is just a status for them.
And after the Soviet space ended, I don't think there was much research. It was all considered just Soviet food or Russian food. And I don't think it gives a lot of those cultures credit.
Tune in to this week's Meat and Three on Heritage Radio Network. That's meat plus sign THREE. Available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to Food Without Borders. This is a show about food, politics, and identity. I'm your host, Sari Kamen, and you are listening to us from the studio in the back of Roberta's Pizza on heritageradionetwork.org. Today, my guests are the founders of Kaona Kitchen, founded by Cole Carruthers and Shilpa Nandwandi. Kaona Kitchen was built on the footsteps of revolutionaries who believed in the power of community and fought for their rights to thrive. Kaona means to eat now in Visayan and to feast now in Punjabi. A fusion between Filipino and Indian culture, it is cooperatively owned and offers wellness coaching, educational workshops, and curriculum, and the catering of traditional Indian and Filipino meals with a healthy twist. Kaona Kitchen is based in Brooklyn, New York, and is a queer, gender nonconforming, women and people of color run cooperative. Kaona Kitchen prides itself on delicious, unique, non-factory methods of creating sustainable food while decolonizing our minds and methods of what it means to create and eat food that has ridges, curves, and bumps, yet never sacrificing flavor or integrity. Welcome to the show, Cole and Shilpa.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for being here. Shilpa, you there? Do we lose Shilpa? All right. We have Shilpa on the line, but maybe she cut out for a minute and we will hopefully try and fix that.
Hi, now I can hear you.
You're back. That's great.
I am. I'm here.
Okay. We're so glad. And we have Cole Carruthers here in studio. So we're very happy to have you both here.
Great. Thank you.
I love this description of Kaona Kitchen. It's so vivid and descriptive. Why don't you start by telling us what is conscious Indian and Filipino cuisine? Whoever wants to take it. Shilpa.
All right. So it's funny because when we were in the Green Worker Cooperative Academy, people kind of asked us the same thing of like, what does it mean for food to be conscious, right? And a lot of that comes from ensuring that the produce that we use, 85% or more of it, is locally grown and sourced. So we know the farm that the food is coming from. We know kind of how it's going from the land to the kitchen and then eventually to you all who are eating it. And also meaning that the love and the care that goes into cooking the food and the stories of our ancestors and of our families and the experiences that we have in creating the food and ensuring that there is intention that's going into it, and the way that that makes you feel when you eat our food. So leaving people walking away feeling nourished and loved and held just by eating our food.
Yeah. Well, since you mentioned that so much of your food is created with the intention of, I guess, telling a story about where you came from, can you start a little bit, both of you, by telling us a little bit about your backgrounds? And Shilpa, since you were just speaking to that, if you want to start.
Yeah, so my family is from Punjab in India. Although I was born and raised here in New York, which is definitely kind of its own process and journey of trying to figure out what like cultural aspects to hold on to, what to remember, how to not forget, and how to kind of embrace that, which has taken me a really long time to get to, but I feel like I am here and there. It's finally kind of flourishing, and I'm able to embrace it and honor it and ask more questions, which has been really nice. But growing up was mostly my mom, you know, being in the kitchen and cooking sabji, which is just different kinds of vegetables, and me getting really sick of it, actually, and not wanting it every day and wanting different things to eat and not just having the same thing with roti and with rice. And so my older sister, kind of, who's 5 years older than me, she started cooking newer stuff, so experimenting with different foods. And then she taught me how to do that. And so that's kind of where I started at maybe 8 or 9 years old, being in the kitchen and loving it. And originally it started off as a love for baking and making cakes and things like that. But as I got older, I also experienced a lot of an increase in food allergies. So I'm allergic to a lot of things that are claimed to be good for you, like apples and celery and peaches and carrots.
Oh my God.
The list definitely goes on, but I don't have to really list all of them, but just as an idea of the things that I can't eat. And so it's been quite the journey of not being so angry at myself for not being able to eat these things, and rather celebrating all of the foods and flavors that I can experience. And also that is a lot of what is brought into Kahana Kitchen from my end.
Are any of the foods you're allergic to, do they ever appear in any of the foods that you cook?
Nope. So I'm like, why should I cook food that I can't eat or enjoy?
Yeah, fair enough. That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
As far as what you were talking about is, you know, like the journey of kind of coming, not coming to terms, but you phrased it obviously much better, because kind of figuring out where you were from and being born in New York City and raised, but I mean, just kind of connecting, I guess, with your identity and your heritage. Has part of that journey been through food and creating this business where you're able to kind of play with and learn about your ancestors through the recipes that you're working on?
Yeah, absolutely. And something that was kind of fun for me was writing some of the descriptions for the menu items, which each of them, or a lot of them, had kind of a story of where they came from, or how a recipe that my mom would make all the time, how can we honor the fact that she's the one who kind of brought this to me and then therefore to us. And not really change it, but kind of just ensure that, again, the produce that we're getting is local, it's gluten-free, you know, it isn't masked by any unnecessary flavors, and to just allow kind of the food to speak for itself. And I've done a lot of, which I'm sure Cole will talk about in a little bit, but I've done a lot of like organizing work within the Filipino community. So actually doing that and spending time in the Philippines has also opened my eyes to kind of the relationship between the Philippines and India, and kind of igniting a larger curiosity around where certain things culturally, where that came from, and kind of the history behind that. So that has kind of been intertwined between Filipino culture and my own heritage and culture.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Can you tell us a little bit about that specifically, and also about your background and what your growing up life was like?
Yeah. My relationship with food was much different. So my family is from a rural area of the Philippines and grew up in an agricultural space in which they were very much connected to the land, and migrated to rural Northern California, where I grew up on a farm growing okra and corn. But I shied away from the kitchen. I was always running around outside. I was always in a tree. And
a tree.
Yeah. So really love nature, but the kitchen was a place that was a little scary for me. And so I actually, eventually when I went to college and moved out to New York after college, I was definitely the person who was like going to Trader Joe's, buying those like frozen chickenless chicken tenders, mm-hmm. putting them in the oven and calling that dinner.
And it's not the worst.
It definitely wasn't the worst. But I didn't experiment and I didn't really think about, definitely didn't think about food and its relation to my energy and how it made me feel. So actually often I would eat, I was a vegetarian, but I definitely ate like quesadillas and fries and just food that wasn't fueling me or making me feel good. And it wasn't really until I met Shilpa that I got back into the kitchen and started experimenting. And it was through also my work in the Filipino community. I've been an organizer in New York for the past 6 years, 7 years now. And I've been able to go back to the Philippines every year. And last year, Shilpa and I had the opportunity to integrate with a farming community. And we were harvesting food, cooking it. And it was only really then where I started to recognize that there is a simplicity in food that can make it also really delicious and beautiful. And it's not something that's so complicated and that I can't also reproduce on my own. So there, yeah, Shilpa talked a lot about the similarities between the Philippines and India, and definitely one of them is both of our countries are big agricultural communities, and a lot of people are connected to the land. And so when my family came here from the Philippines, they were able to farm the land, but in New York City, it's really difficult for the diaspora here to have that relationship with the land. And so one of the things that I've been doing also through Farm School, which I'm a part of, is trying to also build out that that access and talking about where our food comes from and how we can make it, you know, a little bit less mysterious and get people on board and into the kitchen.
As far as creating menus together, do you try and keep things separate? I mean, do you try and keep things more traditional when you're working on, you know, Indian food versus Filipino food, or do you look to find ways to integrate and be more playful and creative?
Yeah, so we only have one thing that actually is a combination of like Filipino and Indian flavors, and that's our cupcake. It's called an Indipino cupcake, which is like a cardamom pistachio gluten-free cake and an ube Swiss meringue frosting.
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah, and so that really is, I guess, the fusion there between our two cultures. But what we
I didn't want to use that word fusion. Yeah. I don't know why. It just feels like a silly word.
Yeah, we definitely don't use that word when we're talking about our food.
I just figured you did. Yeah.
I mean, that's part of the question, right? So traditional, yeah. Like when I mentioned before, when we were in the Philippines, we learned really how to break down like what really is in like adobo, like a chicken adobo, which is like a staple Filipino dish, right? And, you know, whatever region you go to, it's going to be different. But that is like every Filipino swears by their chicken adobo. And we, in our way, have also created a kind of chicken adobo that's different, but also maintains the integrity of traditional flavors. So it's gluten-free, which is like not often the case for chicken adobo. The like Shilpa mentioned before, the ingredients are locally sourced. And then the way that we prepare it is really, really simple. It's only really a few things, whereas we've noticed that other folks do often add a bunch of different stuff. But that we'll take those flavors and we'll pair it next to something that we think will go nicely together. So we might, you know, pair a chicken adobo with a chana masala, which is a traditional Indian dish, right? So we do a little bit of both. So having the traditional flavors, but placing them next to each other.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just curious what conversations are like between both of you when you're coming up with what to cook and what to serve. Because, I mean, there's always that question of, like, you know, authenticity, which is another one of those, like, really sort of problematic, difficult words to wrap your mind around. But when you're approaching food, I mean, obviously you are prioritizing health and you're putting your own spin on it and you know, you're valuing, you know, food that makes you feel good and taking all of that into consideration. So how careful are you being with making sure you're, like you said, you know, preserving the integrity of like the origin of the recipes?
Yeah, I think we're, she's pausing to see if Shilpa would jump in.
I'm here. I can't fully hear what Cole is saying, so I'm not sure if they've already started answering or if I should go for it. So I'm just going to put that out there.
Yeah, I think there might be a little bit of a lag time there.
Yeah.
But Cole hadn't answered yet.
Okay. I mean, it's a little bit tricky. And Cole, I don't know if you have had a different experience about people kind of like questioning our authenticity around the food. I mean, we just keep going back to like testing our food and seeing how people like it and really welcoming any kind of like criticism or any kind of input from people, you know. We try to make sure that we're not just kind of stuck in this bubble of just trying cooking foods and trying foods just between the two of us, because who knows what would happen if that was the case. but we really look to our community to give us feedback often, and we try to make sure that when we are giving or making food for people that people aren't walking away feeling like they're missing something, or that, you know, like looking at it in the like deficit model, but rather like, oh, it's gluten-free, but actually it makes me feel all of these really great things.
Right.
So kind of framing it that way. And yeah, we create a lot of conversations around gathering input from like customers, from potential customers, past ones, and just friends and family also.
Yeah. Sorry. I mean, Cole, go ahead. I was just going to say that it just seems like a lot of people are sort of pushing the messaging these days that like this food is authentic. And I respect the fact that that's not necessarily part of your branding. It's just, you know, this food is really thoughtfully crafted and we're pretty sure it's delicious and it's going to make you feel really good. So I think that, I mean, the word authentic, I think it's been distilled so much that it doesn't necessarily even have value at this point. Although it just feels like one of those buzzwords that people just throw in because they think people want to hear it.
Yeah. And what I was just going to add was that, a lot of Filipino food inherently is, meat heavy. And we only serve two kinds of meat, which is turkey and chicken. And so inherently a lot of our cuisine is, the Filipino side of our cuisine is vegan or vegetarian, or is pretty slim on the meat side. And what we're trying to really lead with is this food is delicious and it'll make you feel really good after you eat it. Because oftentimes, from my experience eating Filipino food, after, you know, eating something, I just feel really heavy and I feel really sleepy and I feel lethargic. And that's not the experience that we want. And also, we were both educators for quite a long time and had to be really creative with our students around foods like tofu, right? Mm-hmm. And so tofu is something that we use a lot in our food. And we actually consider it like a success if somebody is eating our tofu dish and doesn't realize it's not tofu, or that it is tofu.
Right.
Because what we want to do is lead with how it tastes.
Yeah, that makes sense. We're going to take a quick break. We are going to hear from our sponsors today, and then we'll be back to talk more with Cole and Shilpa of Kaona Kitchen.
Today's program was brought to you by Emmy Cheese, specialty cheese from Switzerland made with heart and passion. Since the early 1900s, Emmy has been a passionate supporter of farmers, cheesemakers, and family tradition. They believe in sustainable agriculture and respect for the people, land, and animals that make their business possible. Remaining dedicated to tradition, they strive to lead the industry in innovation, ensuring they bring you only the highest quality, best-tasting cheese from Switzerland. Emmy is best known for importing more than 80% of Swiss Gruyere into the United States, but that's not to overshadow their other specialty cheeses, including Kotbalk cave-aged cheeses, Appenzeller, Tête de Moine, and traditional Emmentaler. For more information, visit emmyusa.com.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Jenna Liut, and I'm the host of Eating Matters here on HRN. Join me as I talk to food systems experts about the issues that shape our experiences of buying, cooking, and eating food. You can find Eating Matters wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
And fall asleep just to wake up.
Hey, you're listening to Food Without Borders on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Sari Kamen, and I have been speaking with Cole Carruthers and Shilpa Nandwandi of Kaona Kitchen. Welcome back, both of you. Hope you enjoyed those cool tunes.
Yeah, that was a great song.
It was like all of a sudden we were in a rave momentarily. Thank you for that, Matt. So you just touched on this, that you were both educators before at some point, but can you speak a little bit more specifically about what you were doing before you made the decision to start a business, which is, you know, obviously such a huge undertaking and risky, and probably, I don't know, maybe people told you not to do it. I have no idea. But just, you know, what was the decision to start Kaona Kitchen, and did you see examples of, you know, Indian and Filipino food before that inspired you to do something else, or you felt like there was a deficit in terms of what, you know, you felt like you wanted to represent? Cole, why don't you go first?
Cool.
Yes.
Before we jumped into this, I was an administrator at a middle school in Brooklyn. I kind of, like what I was mentioning in my story before, was like eating fast and kind of eating food in a way that just like kept me going but didn't really sustain me and didn't make me feel very good. And I noticed that there were that I was really low in energy and that I just like couldn't get through the day without feeling really tired. And I had started talking to my community and started talking to students and wondering, like, were they feeling the same way? And what we found were that a lot of our students weren't even eating breakfast, they weren't eating lunch. And even in my community, and like I was mentioning before, in the Filipino community, lots of people grew up around farmland. And being in New York City, it was really hard to find, you know, fresh food that they knew where it was coming from. And so Shilpa and I were working at the same middle school, and we decided to explore you know, what this looked like for our students and have these conversations with our students, which ultimately we applied the night before a deadline was due for an education incubator with this idea of creating space for our students to talk about food and food justice, ultimately towards an idea or towards the idea that they would organize their own spaces and one day sort of reclaim the food landscape in their communities.
Was that any part of the curriculum before that, or is it just something that you would bring up in conversation?
No way, was not part of the curriculum.
Yeah.
It was just something that we were like excited about because, you know, everybody, most people love to eat.
Yeah.
Right? And so if you're not eating, and particularly communities of color, lots of people come around the dinner table and that's where you have real genuine discussion. That's where you build community. Mm-hmm. And we were finding our students just weren't eating. And we're like, there's something wrong here. So, yeah, like I said, we applied the night before this education incubator. We got accepted and into that incubator. And it helped us really think through what our ideas were. We had to come back to the community, do several interviews with students, with teachers, with people who lived in the neighborhood, with other people who were doing food, and just like get to the root of the issue around food in the community. And it also helped us really think through, you know, what is the structure for all of this stuff? Like, is it a nonprofit? Is it like just a program in a school? Is it a business? And we landed on it's a cooperative, which we knew a little bit about through being in the Philippines a couple of times. There's several examples of the community, particularly in farm areas, that would come together and they would buy resources and share them collectively. And they all had a democratic say in where the resources were going to, how much they were going to spend on XYZ, and who was going to use it at what time. And so we knew that we wanted a non-hierarchical structure in whatever we were creating. Everybody had a seat at the table, whether it was a student, whether it was a teacher, whether it was one of us as a founder. And so that's how we also got plugged into the Green Worker Cooperative Academy, which then built everything, because I don't have a business background. I didn't really know people who had business backgrounds, and I'd only had Filipino food in Jackson Heights, which is really delicious, but is a traditional brick and mortar kind of thing. And I didn't ever see any like classes around Filipino food or even people talking about like food justice and wellness within the Filipino community about food. And so we were really just charging
forward.
Did you
not have it growing up? It was not part of what your family ate?
No, I mean, yes and no. I mentioned that we grew up growing corn and okra.
Uh-huh.
Okra is definitely something that is grown in the Philippines, but corn isn't. And so we often ate a lot of corn or things that were on the farm, or, you know, McDonald's, stuff that is pretty cheap and fast, mm-hmm. which is what followed me into New York and living here.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, and so we built out this sort of business as a cooperative, wanting to be able to have these assessments with our community, be able to address the needs of young people and our community, but have them also be a part of the conversation without us saying like, hey, we know what the problem is and this is what our solution is.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Shilpa, can you speak to that at all? Where, I mean, that was...
Covered
a lot of ground there. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I guess some other things to add is I was... a math teacher before, and I kind of always thought that that was going to be the thing that I do for the rest of my life and how I was going to change the world. And then I realized that, you know, there are some bigger issues kind of outside of the math classroom that are happening and that I need to address. And I was also getting very sick. There was like a scary, like, maybe I have an aneurysm in my brain. I need an angiogram done. And I was like, okay, this is not going to work. I can't keep living like this.
And this was all related to the food allergies?
It was just related to me not taking care of myself in all of the ways that that could kind of take form and manifest. Mm-hmm. and Cole and I both realized that this is kind of no way to keep on living. And so... we were dreaming really big of a cafe, of a community space, you know, and then we kind of took all of these ideas and dreams. And then as Cole was saying, that incubator program really helped in figure out what is it that we're really trying to achieve. And in that process, we also both became health coaches, which was quite the journey of like asking really hard questions around what our relationship to food is. And kind of why is it that way, and how do we create a positive experience around food? Because we noticed that even within a lot of times, there's this kind of idea or feeling of, oh, I ate this thing and so I'm bad for this, or I ate a brownie and I'm the worst, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's this kind of like punishment and reward system that exists within our relationships to food.
Yeah,
so really
there's
also
so much
trying
guilt.
Trying to break that as well.
Just structurally, it seems like you took on so much so quickly, you know, becoming health coaches and then also creating a food business and, you know, education is a big part of it. Did you kind of just tackle everything at once, or did you say, you know, we're going to do this one thing first and then we'll do the next, or did you just approach it holistically?
Yeah, that was difficult considering we were both working
still
from
a little
like
tricky.
Yeah, we were both working at the school from like 7 a.m. to like 4 p.m. Every
day. So you were doing everything while you were still working full time.
Yeah, so we led with the curriculum piece wanting first for it to be like an educational component. And so we worked on that in our like 4-week curriculum first. And then we launched our menu, which we were testing while we were doing our curriculum. We have like a community advisory board who were like running our menu by, and then we would cater certain events in the organizing community and then like survey everybody and see like, did you like this thing? Should we include it on our menu? So in 2017, we were working on our curriculum, and then 2018, we launched our menu. And so it was a lot of moving parts all at the same time, but trying to figure out if we could focus a little bit before we launched each thing.
Does it feel like there's one aspect of it at this point that kind of leads, or is everything very just sort of interwoven?
I think our catering has definitely been at the forefront in this past year. However, keeping that in mind while also knowing that the things that we learned through health coaching, the workshops that we do around food justice and connecting to our community kind of influence the people or the organizations that we work with. And we try to make sure, you know, we're the ones who are prepping the food, cooking the food, delivering it, setting it up. And so how often do you get to meet the people who also actually cook your food? Mm-hmm. And so we try to, when we're explaining what everything is, when we're explaining who we are, to really create that that personal like connection and storytelling with it. And so I think they're kind of interwoven, but I do most of our time and our successes have been through the catering aspect. But as we continue to grow, which we are currently doing, we're about to double in size. Uh-huh. We'll be looking towards a potential partnership with a middle school to really get our curriculum up and moving this coming school year.
That's great. The mission that is on your website and that you sent me says that Kono Kitchen is built on the footsteps of revolutionaries before us who believed in the power of community and fought for their rights to thrive. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? How does it relate to what you're doing on a daily basis?
Ooh, in so many ways. I think like one of the things that just like first comes to mind is we were really inspired by the Black Panthers free food program and thinking about how do communities actually sustain themselves without being reliant on outside forces or like outside corporations, sort of, you know, mm-hmm. trying to build that ability to sustain a community from within, right? So from the Black Panthers to even in the Philippines, in the countryside, and people literally needing to fight in order to maintain their ancestral lands, whether it be against displacement from foreign corporations, or government encroaching on their lands, but knowing that, you know, if they don't have access to their lands and aren't able to grow their food, then they won't be able to live. And it's beyond just being able to live. It's actually, for us, it's being able to thrive. So it's not just about like, mm-hmm. you know, like food access or like just having basic access to food, but it's also about your developing positive experiences with food and feeling nourished and feeling fulfilled by your food. And so mm-hmm. I think we draw a lot of lessons from different organizing movements and spaces food justice warriors throughout the years and currently and try to bring that aspect into what we do. So that's why we're a cooperative. Mm-hmm. We want to eliminate like, you know, hierarchies and forms of oppression within our co-op. But even when we're talking about our food, we don't want to pass our food, our produce, our ingredients. We want them to be ensured. We want to ensure that they're being farmed sustainably that they're actually also helping benefit the communities that they come from, so that when we're serving that to people, they're feeling connected and they're feeling fulfilled, and they're not also eating sort of the energy that food came from, right? So I think a lot of that.
Yeah. I mean, also in your mission, it says that Kona Kitchen is queer, gender, nonconforming, or the business is helmed by queer, gender, nonconforming people of color. How do your personal identities intersect with your brand identities? Because that feels like, you know, such a conscious choice to include that when you're talking about your business, whereas, you know, most places are like, this is our restaurant and this is the food. They don't usually describe the people that are cooking the food.
Yeah, well, I think that's what's what I think, in my opinion, is missing from, you know, a lot of spaces. I think in the food production cycle, and Chippa was kind of alluding to this earlier, you don't really know who's cooking your food, or you don't know where your food is coming from. And so for us, it's really important to highlight who is actually doing the labor in producing the food and where it's coming from. And oftentimes, the people who are doing that labor are marginalized identities or marginalized people. And even thinking about you know, traditional businesses and where they get their funding and all that stuff, those resources aren't usually available to marginalized communities. A lot of people of color are like redlined, or there are really there are these policies that inherently disadvantage people of color from being able to access loans to even start businesses or to create brick and mortars, right? And so it's really important for us to put those identities in the forefront, because they've just been so erased from the picture.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I would say keeping that in mind, does it feel, or has, you know, based on your experience, has it felt like a good time or not such a good time to launch your business?
I think it's been very exciting when we take a moment to really see, and because we're kind of hitting the 1 year, or like just a bit above the 1 year mark of doing everything. It's the conversation of, this literally didn't exist a year and a half ago, you know, and taking a moment to recognize that and to find, I think what you see kind of with our presidency, with the presidency in the Philippines, with the same in India and many different countries around the world, you see kind of this rise of fascism and of oppression existing for people of color, for those who are more disenfranchised. It's a ripe and opportune time to talk about these things and to bring in another solution of, you know, like solidarity economics versus this capitalist imperialist system. You know, we're literally creating another way to live, and bringing that conversation to the people around us, which I think a lot of people have been looking for and have been curious about. And so, a lot of times when people are emailing us for an order, they're saying that the reason they're even emailing us is because they saw our mission and value. They saw that it's owned by QTPOCs. They see those things and therefore want to make that connection with us and with our food. And so in this kind of time of heightened oppression and violence towards a lot of our communities, kind of seeing something flourish and give kind of that hope and opportunity for people to experience something like this has been really great to be able to be a part of and to kind of see that happen.
Yeah, I'm sure it feels like, you know, like an active thing you could do. I mean, just by supporting you, you're not just eating food. You're not just, you know, going on to Seamless and ordering a burger and fries. I mean, it feels like it's food activism in a way. That being said, tell us where we can find you, how we can, I guess, hire you to cater or hire you to teach us to live more healthfully. Cole?
Yeah. So, April's a really busy month for us.
Because you're like, don't call us in April.
Well, no. Well, come join us, actually. So And speaking of food and activism, so our co-op is a part of the International Coalition for Human Rights in the Philippines. And so April's a really big month for us because we're going to head down to D.C. with Filipino activists across the country. We are going to talk about the rise in fascism in the Philippines and here in the United States, and, you know, really link also struggles to places like India, and talk about how we can really fight for a more just world here in the United States and in the Philippines. And so, you know, when we don't just talk about being organizers in the sense that, like, yeah, we pay our dues to be a part of this organization, but, you know, we as a cooperative, like, every other week or so, we're also rallying, like, we're in the streets and we're also taking an active stance against oppression and repression in the United States. So you can find us on iTRIP's website or on their Instagram. We also have our website and Instagram up and active. But what we do offer in the meantime is the opportunity to, yeah, cater from us. We have a full food service menu, which can range from, you know, coming through and dropping off some really delicious food to, if you have a wedding, we can be there cooking and serving it up. But also, we offer various workshops or educational spaces. And so if you want to talk about food migration, you want to talk about food justice, you want to learn how to compost, if you also want to learn how to meal plan, there's a bunch of different ways that we can interact and we can have that conversation.
Great. And what's your website?
It's kaonakitchen.com, K-H-A-O-N-A kitchen.com.
Okay. And same for Instagram?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Great.
Feel free to call us too. You'll probably end up talking to me.
And their phone number is on the website?
Yeah, it's 347-915-5426.
I love that. That felt like so old-fashioned, like an old commercial with like the phone number in it.
Yeah, like actually call.
Pick up the phone. Talk to a person. What a crazy idea. Well, Shilpa and Cole, thank you so much for spending this time with us. It's just been so interesting, and I feel like I've learned so much just by speaking with both of you. And congratulations on your year anniversary.
Thank you.
That's a huge milestone.
Thank you.
And doubling in size, it's just tremendous how much you've accomplished in such a short amount of time. So I look forward to keeping tabs on both of you and seeing what lies ahead. And thank you out there for tuning in today. You can always find us on heritageradionetwork.org, but you can also find Food Without Borders on iTunes and Spotify and Stitcher, and subscribe. See you next week, or hear you next week, listen to you next week, Wednesday at 6 p.m. ET, Heritage Radio Network.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.